I'd like to call the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division to order. We are just waiting for a quorum, but also the, we've kind of had a rash of, not a rash, but we had amendments, so we had to wait till they're passed out. We're due to be out of here at 10 o'clock, right? So although we don't have a quorum, we can start. I believe, is it Representative Schimansky? Is it? I didn't see her. All right, Schimansky, right? Good morning, Representative Schimansky. Do you want me to move your bill? Do you have someone to move your bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move his bill.
Representative Schimansky, you want this one to be to return to finance, correct?
Yes.
The chair will move House File 3458 to bring it before the committee and recommend a pass and return to finance. And we will have a quorum in a minute or so, and then we'll call a quorum. But you may start, Representative Schimansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also request that we incorporate the DE1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Schimansky moves, would like to move the DE1 amendment, which is a delete all amendment. We'll have to wait to what?
I'll move the DE1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Morrow moves the DE1 amendment. 3-6-7. We don't have a quorum yet. We don't have a quorum, but you can discuss the amendment, Representative Schimansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the DE1 amendment on House File 3458 simply requests that MnDOT consult with the heavy highway users when designing roundabouts on trunk highways. Some of the rationale for that is adjacent to my district, we have recently had new roundabouts constructed and caused some traffic problems for the heavy haulers, the overlength, the overwidth loads, those types of things. And so we're simply asking MnDOT to incorporate in their design process consultation with the truckers and the permitted load contractors so they design roundabouts adequately to move the bigger trucks through roundabouts. And some of the reasons why we've had situations where trucks, you know, either were overlength and ended up, you know, crossing over the top of the interior mound in the roundabout, or in the case of a heavy truck crane that had to be rerouted, probably adding 40 to 50 miles to his route because he could not negotiate the roundabout on his normal route. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that the committee look favorably upon this bill.
Thank you. Any questions of Representative Schimansky? If not, if you just want to wait a minute, we will, when we have a quorum, we'll call you back and we can vote on it.
All right. I can be patient. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbert?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if MnDOT wants to speak to this or approve it, disapprove.
I thought they were okay, but... Welcome to the committees.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Verdeen from MnDOT Government Affairs, and roundabout design standards are still something we're working on, so we have no objection to consulting with the trucking industry as we continue that process.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Schimansky, I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. I've been to Europe now on a couple of occasions, and in my travels through France, Germany, Austria, Italy, at just about every intersection, there's no intersection, it's a roundabout. And Europeans have perfected the roundabouts, their semis, their trucks, they can maneuver the roundabouts. They build them in a way that accommodates both automobiles and trucks. And I'm really glad to see roundabouts starting here in the United States because we know that they're better as far as safety. And I guess I'm just surprised that we didn't follow the European model and their standards, because if we would have done that from the beginning, I think that we would have had a much more efficient rollout of the roundabout system here in Minnesota. And so I would encourage MnDOT just to continue working on this, but to look at the European model and the way that they do it, because it works over there and it should work here. And I've been seeing more and more roundabouts appear on the on and off ramps at the intersections, and they're just too small. And for anybody that's traveled to Europe, you would know it by looking at it right away. And so I would just encourage you to look at the European standards.
Representative Szymanski, we do have a quorum. Also, there's a fiscal note, and Ms. Zuhr says no, it doesn't have any impact. So we do have a quorum, so the chair will again renew the motion that House File 3458, as amended. That's right. Excuse me. We didn't adopt the amendment. Representative Morrill moved the amendment. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. The DE amendment is passed, and now I will renew the motion that House File 3458, as amended, be recommended to pass and return to Finance. Any questions? Not. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. House File 3458, is, as amended, will be returned to Finance. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee.
And would someone move the minutes? We do have a
quorum. So moved.
Representative Hoberg moved the minutes of, was it, of last week? March 15th? 18th.
That's
any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary. The minutes of March 15th are approved. Representative Hawes. That's right.
Thank you.
Representative Hawes, do you have someone to move your amendment?
I do not. Would you do that, Mr. Chair?
Okay. The chair will move that House File 2340 be recommended to pass and be laid over. Is that what
Mr. Chair, there's an amendment also.
It's Senate File 2340.
Yes, Senate File, and there's amendment to that Senate File. S2340DE1, which is just a clarity better language.
The chair will also move the DE1 amendment.
Thank you much. Just 1 minute to the problem was brought to me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The amendment is before us. Any questions or corrections? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, the DE1 amendment is approved. Representative Hawes.
Thank you. This conflict was brought to me by the Stearns County Veterans Service officer that active military people that were recipients of the Purple Heart were having trouble getting license plates. If I was working at the desk, this would not have been a problem because I would have stamped approved. But they can't. They have to follow the rules, and the rules were saying, no, you can't. You have to be a veteran. So this allows the people that are on active duty that have won a Purple Heart to have a license plate, and they are awarded of that. We have with us today representatives of the Military Order of Purple Heart, Inc., and they would just like to say we agree.
We have a question. Representative Reiner?
No, I'm sorry. I do have a question, but I'll wait until the testifier is finished. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Sir?
Mm-hmm. Good morning, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Bob Connor. I'm the Department Adjutant for the Military Order of Purple Heart. With me today is our Department Junior Vice Commander Bill Lilladahl. And I can tell the committee that our organization at the department level and at the national level approves of this change to law.
Thank you. Mr. Lilladahl, do you have some comment?
No comment, sir. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Now, Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hawes, I thank you very much for bringing this. I actually just had a veterans advocate maybe 2 weeks ago in Duluth bring this issue forward. So it's not just happening in your part of the state. It's happening in other corners of the state as well. So thank you.
Well, I think it's with the use of National Guard for fighting wars that caused the problem. Thank you very much.
Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Haas, could I, on the original bill on lines 319 and following, you had added son or daughter to the eligibility section. And now the DE1, for the Gold Star license plate, excuse me, and now the DE1, I think, omits that. I was just wondering if you could walk me through that.
I think it actually works better with sons and daughters on there. If you would like to make an amendment, I would accept that amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, I had actually even gone further because I had included sons, daughters, and siblings for the Gold Star license plate. This was brought to me by a constituent whose brother has, who died about 2 years ago now in Iraq. And so he had asked and worked with the Gold Star Association to ensure that sons, daughters, and siblings would be eligible. I don't know how you feel about that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I would accept that as a friendly amendment, and it has been discussed, and it still has no cost.
Okay. Any questions by the committee? Representative Mason?
Question. Were you making that amendment then or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, I would make that. I know that I think Mr. Burris probably has to scramble to put it back in.
Representative Mr. Chair Mason. And Representative Hawes, I guess I have a question adding all of the people to that. I mean, if it's supposed to honor specific people, it gets more complicated when you're expanding it. Like,
okay.
Representative Hawes?
Mr. Chair, committee members, that is how it would work if you were a veteran and a recipient of the Purple Heart. That's why it's legitimate.
I think the question, Representative Hawes, though, is the fact that, in my opinion, that really opens it up practically everybody, because you have siblings. Where do you stop? That would be my question. And I'm a veteran. I'd have to say that. I don't have the Purple Heart. But I'm a little concerned about opening that up. You could just forget about it and spread it to everybody, whether it's a Gold Star or the Purple Heart.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I would be comfortable with making it congruent to whatever the language is for the Purple Heart veteran, when recipient of the Purple Heart that was a veteran, whatever that language is, make it congruent, and then you have a complete benefit to the active duty Purple Heart winner.
Representative Holmberg.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm a little confused. I'm wondering if we're mixing apples and oranges. My understanding with the DE-1, we were adding active service members that had received a Purple Heart to the eligibility. And then from Representative Morrow's comments, I thought we were switching gears here and now talking about the Gold Star plate. Looking at the Section 2 of this bill, maybe that amends every type of veterans plate. Maybe Mr. Burris can help us here.
Mr. Burris, would you care to comment?
Mr. Chair and members, the Morrow amendment would just go to the Gold Star plate. So that amendment would be a separate plate from some of the other veterans plates that have been discussed. So the change to the combat wounded plate would be an eligibility change just for that plate, and then the change for that's proposed for adding sons, daughters, and siblings would just be for the Gold Star plate.
We didn't act on Representative Haas had said he would accept it, but we didn't act on that, so we'd still be okay with Mr. Burris. We'd still be applying only to the Gold Star?
Mr. Chair, there would still need to be an adoption of Representative Morrow's amendment, and you know the committee could do that.
The question I have, though, we are incorporating the Purple Heart plate. That's separate to the... We're only dealing with the Gold Star. We aren't actually increasing the eligibility on the Purple Heart by what you're saying.
That's right, Mr. Chair. The change to the Gold Star plate wouldn't affect the eligibility for the Purple Heart plate.
Do you understand that, Representative Hodge?
Yes, I do.
Representative Morrow.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would make that motion and move that amendment. And just very quickly, the reason in part is I've talked with the Gold Star Association. These folks who would be eligible for the plate are eligible to be members of the Gold Star Association. And I should mention, members, it's been reported to me that sometimes at these meetings of the Gold Star Association, there is actually conflict within the group. Why isn't everyone here eligible to get the plate? This amendment would take care of that problem.
Representative Morrell, I'd also say the same thing about the Daughters of the American Revolution. We could take everybody in here when you start getting to that, because that'd be a meeting, too. And I'm really concerned about spreading the eligibility of these special plates. the patrol has testified, and they'll come in again, that they just have a difficult time in the evenings. They can't identify a plate anymore. And I think we're bringing about a situation where it's basically safety. It's not the fact that if everybody wants to advertise, I think they can get a bumper sticker. And they can take a bumper sticker that doesn't even stick. They can move it. But I really get concerned about the expansion of this these plates. Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chair, may I ask where this bill's going next? Is it going to the Finance Committee?
His is going to be laid on the table.
Mr. Chair.
It's going to be amended on a bill which I'm carrying dealing with special plates on Thursday.
Well, Mr. Chair, I withdraw my motion for now, and we can return and talk about it more. But I will withdraw it in respect for what you're saying right now.
Mr. Chair.
If you want to vote on it, I mean, we vote on it. I don't want to say this because I'm doing
it. Mr. Chair, I would appreciate the withdrawing of that because I think we're going to get a cost note on that if we put it on. And that might block what we're trying to do, and I would appreciate withdrawing it.
Okay, we're back to square one. We're dealing strictly with the DE amendment then. All in favor of the DE amendment, unless there's further discussion?
Get us out of here.
We did. Any other testimony other than what I've given, I guess? If not, all in favor of... wait, we don't have to vote. We're laying it over, Representative Haas, so we'll take care of that on Thursday, and it'll be taken care of.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Chairman, thank you. Testifiers.
See, we have another one?
Both of them are Morrow.
We have Representative Morrow that's due to have a bill up. And while the members were waiting for a minute, there will not, it appears there will not be an Representative Holmberg, do you want to wait just a minute? I just want to make an announcement. It appears there's not going to be an omnibus finance bill unless something changes. So a lot of the bills that we've heard, which laid on the table, which were possible inclusion, we may have to bring up on Thursday to vote. And we may have to bring just the authors back, but we won't be doing any additions to that. Yeah, thank you. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 2427.
Okay, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 2427 concerns Highway 14 and its inclusion in the STIP. The bill does two primary things. First, it requires the two unfinished EISs on Highway 14, one from North Mankato to New Ulm and one from Owatonna to Dodge Center, be completed by the end of the year. These two EISs represent the only two unfinished ones in the state that were begun before August 2006. Second, what this bill would do is say once the EISs are completed and federal approvals are given, the bill requires MnDOT to put these two unfinished projects in the next update of the STIP. We believe that the STIP process is the fairest way to get these done. I've got some concerns about the interaction between MnDOT and the local ATPs that I'm sure we'll get into. The bill is not... Just going into the next STIP doesn't mean the project's going to be scheduled for completion immediately. Rather, it gives MnDOT at least 3 to 4 years to plan for the project's inclusion and to set funding priorities. I don't prefer this type of approach to funding highway projects. I feel at this point it's really the only choice. Constituents have been fighting to try to finish this project now for over 40 years, members, and you've heard me talk about this project for 4 years. I want to repeat. MnDOT's announcement would mean that we're waiting at least 60 years for this project to be completed at the earliest, and folks in my area find that time period unacceptable. Mr. Chair and members, I have J.D. Burton from the Highway 14 Partnership with me as well, who I believe has some additional comments on this bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is J.D. Burton. I'm with the law firm of Flaherty & Hood, and I'm here on behalf of the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership. As you may recall, the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership is a coalition of cities, towns, counties, chambers of commerce, and local businesses and private individuals in southern Minnesota, and we're advocating for the four-lane expansion of Highway 14 from New Ulm in the west to Rochester in the east. The Highway 14 Partnership strongly supports this legislation. We recognize that there are, on the face of it, some strong reservations to this type of an approach. The legislature has been hesitant to specifically designate projects for inclusion in the STIP or through earmarking. But we believe that this project merits additional consideration by the committee from that in that regard. The reason is because both of the duration that the partnership's been working on this project and this project's been waiting for completion, as well as the approach that this legislation is taking. Highway 14, as you recall, has earned the title of one of the deadliest highways in the state. We do have higher statewide crash rates when you compare rural two-lane highways. We do have, in some segments, higher fatality rates, and we do have heavier and higher truck and heavy agricultural traffic rates than a lot of rural two-lane highways across the state. We've had a number of deaths that continue, including one just over a month ago. We believe that the STIP approach is the most fair and balanced approach to take. Again, it's not an iron fist that the bill would mandate that this project has to be done next year. In fact, the way that the bill would be structured, we envision MnDOT would be looking at these projects in the 2012 to 2015 STIP, which could potentially put them towards completion towards 2015. This would give MnDOT, we believe, an ample opportunity to rework their program, finish, for example, a Highway 60, and then get this project going. The local ATPs have regularly made Highway 14 a top priority to be finished, but we were very surprised to find out that the department's 20-year highway plan from this summer would have these two projects being finished in 2028 at the earliest, and that's in piecemeal fashion. So again, we know there's a money issue facing the state. We know that there's a priority issue facing the state, but we believe that this STIP approach would get these projects done. It would finally get them off the table for the state to move on to other priorities in the area, and that it would represent the most fairest way to do this. So again, we, the constituents and the public down in Highway 60, or excuse me, down in on Highway 14, are ready for this project to move forward. They're tired of either driving on the road or avoiding the road completely to get to their destinations, and we're hopeful that the legislature will understand the unique circumstances facing this project and be willing to support this bill. Thank you very much.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Mr. Burton?
Yes, sir.
What do you attribute the delay to in terms of completing the EIS?
Mr. Burton?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, we, at times, we don't quite know. We issued a letter to the department this October in response to the 20-year plan. What we interpret the delay being is a combination of Chapter 152 requirements and funding requirements that are taking up some of the resources. However, the Highway 14 bills were in line to be next up. Highway 60 has trumped some of that. We hope that, again, this STIP approach will allow these projects to move forward by 2015 to begin, and at that point then, we would be able to secure the necessary federal funding to finish these projects. So it's a lot of different things. Unfortunately, we don't quite know the exact reasons why MnDOT has denied this other than funding.
Mr. Chair, if I might. Hornstein.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, if I might just comment on that as well. One thing that we hear, Representative Hornstein, is, well, we need to wait to see what the central office does in terms of completing the EIS before. It's not a conflict of tension between the local ATP and MnDOT Central. And I thank Representative Holbrook for bringing a cute visual aid to demonstrate our argument. The young person with Representative Holbrook would finish college before this project would even, at the earliest, be completed.
Nelson.
Looking at you with stunned disbelief.
I can't see the face that the little one's making. But question I have, Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, this does not affect any other transportation area. It just affects the one in Southwest. It wouldn't take money from other projects around the state and transfer it to there to get this project done.
Mr. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I think that's one of the arguments that we'll hear from MnDOT in a moment. I'll let them articulate whether they think this would have an effect or not, but I want to be very, very clear, and I've worked very hard with Mr. Burton and others to assure that this would not affect the Highway 60 project, which is the major project in this MnDOT district. Mr. Chair, at some point I also have an A2 amendment to be moved.
Do you want to move that amendment?
If I might, Mr. Chair. Just, Mr. Chair and members, the A2 amendment just gives the effective date as being the day after enactment.
Okay. Everyone see the amendment and just change the effective date? Now, all in favor of the approval of Amendment A2, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary. Amendment A2 is adopted. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Moore. That's a concern, and I guess I'd like to get the answer to that question, because having the mayor from my city where I grew up talked about a project in through Brooklyn Center, Highway 100, that took 40 years to get completed, and he started out on that project. It was on the city council, became mayor, went to Washington, worked for Senator Durenberger, came back here, is very active in transportation issues, and so I'm just wondering, I'm just concerned that if this is going to take money from other parts of the state, then what other road projects are going to be delayed that have been waiting just as long? And I understand the EIS is that's what's holding it up. I support getting the EIS done, but I'm concerned that we're fighting over scraps here and trying to steal money from other parts of other metro or other transportation districts to get projects done in my own area. And, I do also support the STIP list. And
Mr. Chair, just two quick points on that. First, Representative Walz issued his appropriation request list, and it includes work along this portion of the roadway, but that can't go forward until the EIS is done. So that's the EIS portion of that. And Mr. Chair, members, I think Representative Holberg and I are on the same page, and I do appreciate that MnDOT has given greater clarification about innovative financing public-private partnerships and what that means, because I've asked MnDOT, does this mean I have to get Medica or United Health to relocate to Nicollet, Minnesota, in order to get a public-private partnership to do this roadway? So I think there are a number of tensions about redirecting money. I should say that MnDOT has given me some assurances that it will take into account that not every two-lane highway in rural Minnesota has that possibility for a public-private partnership, and try to allay some of those fears that we're going to be redirecting money to the highest bidder. I think Mr. Burton also wanted to respond, Representative Nelson.
Representative Nelson, the Highway 14 Partnership, in consultation with Representative Morrow, has tried very hard to draft something that would not affect projects outside of District 6 and District 7, which is where these two projects would be included. But, of course, you know, there's nothing that would potentially stop the department from transferring money from all over the state from something like this. But we believe that the way we've designed it, with the timing of it, that would only affect those projects in District 6 and District 7. So that's our intent, is not to take projects from other parts of the state that are also worthy, but to focus on the priorities of the folks of southern Minnesota first and only.
Mr. Burton, on the same, what you're saying then, have you had hearings throughout the district to say that this is a district priority if you're not funneling some money differently?
Mr. Chairman, we, both through the local ATP process and through the Highway 14 partnership, we believe is a strong reflection of the priority. If you look at the partnership first, we have almost all of the major cities along the corridor and all of the major counties and chambers and businesses supportive of this project. We think that's a strong reflection. Mayor Gary Zelmer from North Mankato is the president of the Highway 14 partnership. He testified in the Senate 2 weeks ago that the ATP in District 7 has continually made Highway 14 a top priority, yet we keep getting bumped back, and so we're unclear why we have to wait another 20 years if it continues to be a high local priority for the district.
And Mr. Chair, I should mention, MnDOT does have money on this as well.
Other questions. I expect we'll get them up.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Beard.
I'll pass till Magnus speaks, Mr. Chair.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I've got a couple portions of your bill here, Representative Morrow, that I have some problems with. In the second page, basically, where you're saying the on line 2.8, they may not be delayed, and so basically, what you're saying is the you have to move ahead with Highway 14, and can't be delayed. So, which projects in District 7 and District 8 may not get done because of this language in here?
Representative Wall?
Mr. Chair, first, I want to be clear about District 8. I'm not sure about the effect.
District 6 and 7, excuse me.
I'm sorry, District 6 and 7. A couple comments. First, we've been delaying the sections we've talked about in favor of other projects so far. Second, what I would note is there are some exceptions. This is for when it's first in. What I'm worried about is the same thing I've heard about other projects throughout the state. It may get into the STIP, and then it gets delayed. And so what this tries to do is set conditions for delaying the project. Doesn't deny that the commission any authority to delay the Highway 14 project once it gets into it, into the STIP, but rather set some parameters on that. What I'm worried about is it gets in today and it's out tomorrow, but I think Mr. Burton also has a response to that.
Mr. Chairman, Burton. Representative Magnus, again, as we tried to put the STIP together and from the consultations we've had with House Research, we do believe that MnDOT would have the flexibility to not even begin these projects until 2015 at the latest, which does give ample authority, ample time for projects like a Highway 60 or others to finish their completion date and then rework some of those priorities. But it would be up to the department and the local ATPs to determine exactly what projects would get bumped out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then that gets me to line 214 where it says under existing appropriations. And Representative Morrow, you certainly live in those districts, and as do I. And I know Representative Nelson was concerned about projects in his district not being funded. And that's the problem we're having in our district, Representative Morrow. When you put the language in for Highway 60 to get done and took basically the ability for MnDOT to fund some of the other projects that need to be done until Highway 60 gets done. And that was talked about, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Morrow and members at a recent ATP meeting that I attended. When we talked about preservation and safety issues on the roads and the programs that they have and the inability, the concern from District 7 was the inability to even do preservation projects on the road because of the tremendous cash drain that Highway 60 had placed on the district. And their concern, Representative Morrow, is that, as Mr. Burton said, we'll get Highway 60 done in the time frame, hopefully, that you outlined prior to 2015. But their hope is then to use that money available, if there is any available, to use for preservation and safety, because they're flat going to have to delay those projects, Mr. Chairman. And you know what happens to a road when you delay the preservation of the road, Mr. Chairman. You don't have much of a road left. And I hate to see us go to minimum maintenance roads all over the place down there. But that's my concern. You know, you put these projects in, and I can see Representative Nelson coming back now next week with a bill to do his project, aren't you, Representative? And so we're basically taking away MnDOT's authority to do what to do their job, and now the legislature is deciding what projects will be funded.
Mr. Chair, if I might respond.
Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chair, first and foremost, the Highway 60 proposal wasn't brought by me. It was brought by a member of that area who was very worried about the two-lane, four-lane head-on collisions that were leading to fatalities. Number two, the Highway 60 project was at the top of the STIP at that time. And I won't go into why certain members were worried about that project being moved around, but it wasn't because I wanted Highway 60 done. I think we need to correct the record on that. Mr. Chair and members, the concern here is a safety concern. Representative Magnus, I completely agree with you. Preservation and safety. I'm holding the police report from the February 27th fatality that happened in my district, and I think I've mentioned previously in this committee. I believe there's been a fatality in my district on Highway 14 every year I've been in this legislature. So it is a safety concern, Representative Magnus. Representative Magnus, I don't hear a plan from MnDOT. Give me some plan for addressing this problem on Highway 14, and I would be satisfied. But I just don't know of any plan other than we'll start talking about it again in 2028.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
and Representative Morrow, I certainly agree with you about the safety concerns. And in fact, I think before you got here, I had a major transportation bill that included funding special projects in it, but I created a special projects fund to fund Highway 14, of course, Highway 60, your project, Representative Nelson, and several other projects around the state. I even funded Central Corridor with it, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much.
But I created a special projects account to do these sorts of things, where you have issues, safety issues like this, because I know I've been to enough ATP meetings in District 7 over the last 8 years to know that is a great concern. And I agree with that. It needs to be done. But the problem is, how are we going to do it, and who's going to suffer as the consequence? Because I already said, Representative Moore, District 7 is very concerned that they cannot preserve the roads we have and do safety projects. And also, Mr. Chairman, when MnDOT comes up, or if anyone else around the table has got an answer to this, I'd like to know when the federal program is going to come into place and how that funding is going to be. Are they going to delay it again? I think it is already. It already is delayed. And I don't know if that was a deal cut with Congressman Oberstar and Speaker Pelosi now to get that done or whatever, but the question is out there on the federal funding side. Mm. Mr. Chairman, I went through that too, where we took funding from rural Minnesota and put it into the metro area to do the project like Crosstown because the federal funding was delayed. And they said, well, we'll give you that money, will be replaced. And they were, and they did. MnDOT stuck to their word, but it did, again, put a strain on our rural areas. But it took the $200 million out. So I've got issues here, Mr. Chairman, that I think is a dangerous precedent here with this.
Mr. Chair, if I might just very quickly respond to that. Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, then I would invite you to join me in the letter that I have crafted to be sent to President Obama about federal funding for roads. There has been a Senate version, members, that was sent around and signed bipartisanly by the members of the Senate Transportation Finance Committee urging federal investment in roads in our state, Representative Magnus, especially in rural Minnesota, especially, and I do mention Highway 14 because I do understand the budget buster argument here. I also know, Representative Magnus, that in District 7, we have deep concerns that District 7 money was used to help complete the District 6 portion of Highway 14, but we don't see that money flowing back to help in the District 7 part. Unfortunately, I worry about that as well. Representative Magnus, I think you and I are on the same page for most of this. And, Mr. Chair, I know we spend a good deal of time on this, and I am happy to, I think, let MnDOT have its
I want to call MnDOT in. And also remember, there's District 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, mm-hmm. and they aren't even talking yet. So we're dealing with each district, and that's what the danger is. There's no doubt about it. Is someone from MnDOT ready to be grilled? Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Peterson from MnDOT.
Do you want to respond, Mr. Peterson, to some of the... one thing I think we should probably bring out, because it's been stressed, is the fact of safety. And I recognize, and I get letters and I get calls, as you can well imagine, every road in their own particular instance is the most important and the most unsafe road. So how does this relate to the situation? Apparently this has been delayed. Can you comment on that? And that would be a district, as far as the district goes, it's probably number one in a district, but maybe not statewide or some of these things. Any comment you have to enlighten us a little bit on this issue?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, thank you. On the safety issue, one of the things that you're probably aware of is that a few years ago, MnDOT undertook the Towards Zero Death Initiative, which has resulted in a pretty substantial decrease in the amount of traffic fatalities statewide. And part of the success of that initiative, I believe, is the approach the department has taken in looking at kind of what we call proactive safety solutions, which means not just reacting to locations where there are crashes, but rather implementing things like rumble strips and wider stripes and intersection lighting and turn lanes, smaller, low-cost fixes system-wide, which have a substantial impact on safety overall. It doesn't address, for example, in the case of Trunk Highway 14, where you may have locations where there's a high crash frequency. I'm not prepared to speak to that necessarily, but overall, it does result in greater safety on our roads statewide. With respect to safety on Trunk Highway 14, again, on these segments, I had some research done last year when a bill on Trunk Highway 14 came up, and the crash rates on Trunk Highway 14 are, you know, slightly above state average, as I recall, but certainly not among the worst in terms of crash rates in the state. And then as far as the priority of these projects, the fact that both District 6 and District 7 are working on environmental impact statements for these remaining segments of the highways indicates, I think, the fact that they do think that these projects are a relatively high priority. And hopefully when the environmental impact statements are done and the preferred alternatives are identified, that they'll then be able to work with the proponents to try and find a way to finance these projects. And unfortunately, that is the heart of the problem. As an example, the project from North Mankato to New Ulm, which is referenced in this bill, the cost estimate for that project is somewhere around $250 to $300 million. District 7's annual construction budget is in the range of $42 to $45 million. So you can see that this is really almost an impossible size project for them to swallow in terms of being able to finance it. And that's why it appears in the long-range plan in 2030, because to put it earlier in the plan would squeeze out so many other projects that are worthy projects as well. And so the strategy, as I understand it, is to have it in the plan, but have it be far enough out so that it doesn't violate the fiscal constraint that we've applied to the plan. We just say that future funding will come beyond the end of the plan and hope and that we will get funding from other currently unidentified sources and work with the proponents to make that happen.
Mr. Peterson, I believe there have been some change because, as you indicate, finances, as far as the probability of additional separated or four-lane highways, that's been a change even from the federal level, that you probably never see a divided highway. Is that correct or not? Basically not see any new divided highways. Would that be a fair statement?
Mr. Chairman, I had not heard that. I think, again, from the information that I've gotten from our districts, I do think that the preferred alternative for these two segments will be a four-lane divided
that
highway.
One would be. My understanding is it from Congressman Oberstar, at the federal level, it's been coming down or looking at design rather than, as I indicated, so this one is still probably be considered as a divided highway. Yeah. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just an observation first, as I'm looking over this bill, I'm sympathetic to finishing the EIS, and that's where my questions to Mr. Peterson will be, but I got to tell you, I've got some real pause about the lines on 2.8 with the definitive absolute language. They may not be delayed, and the things that seem to be implied in that. Every time we do this, mm-hmm. we end up with consequences we deal with 2 and 3 years later. And I'm thinking of, and I was having a very calm morning until you said the magic words, Chapter 152, and my blood pressure shot right up because I'm remembering the Highway 60 debacle and how that's had an effect on everything else in the southern half of the state. So, but back to the EIS. I'm with you on the EIS, I think. But Mr. Peterson, talk to us about the EIS process that you're in now. Why is it being dragged out so that this representative feels he must actually have legislation to compel you to complete it? Would it be completed anyhow? What is the shelf life on an EIS? If we finish it now and we can't start construction for 7 years, do we have to do it all over again? And so on and so forth. I think you answer a few of those, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, the shelf life of an EIS, I think before it needs to be refreshed, is in the neighborhood of 4 to 5 years, and I'm sorry, I don't know the exact amount, but I'm pretty sure at 7 years it would need to be refreshed, so they'd have to go back and do some re-examination of the findings. I don't think it would call for a complete, do-over of the EIS. I think the schedule itself that's in the bill, I think, is fairly close to the current schedule that both EIS processes are on. The issue that we have with putting these schedules in statute is that the entire process is not under MnDOT's control. We work with other state regulatory agencies who have the legal right to weigh in and review and comment on the EIS process, and the time constraints that they have to submit their comments is set in either regulation or law. And so many times we find ourselves at cross purposes with some of these other agencies too, so it takes time to kind of work through the issues and come up with a resolution. And so unfortunately that often does drag out the time period, and that is as much our concern as anyone else's, I think. But so far we have been working very hard to keep both these environmental impact statement processes on schedule, and I'm optimistic that we'll be able to stick to the current schedules that are posted on our websites.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond as well to Representative Beard. Representative Beard, in part, you're right about the EIS and the shelf life. One of my concerns was in working with our congressional delegation trying to seek federal funding, for example, purchasing right-of-ways and the like. Can't do that until the EIS is completed. This is particularly a problem in North Mankato. There's a 1441 interchange. I know that locals have applied for the Greater Minnesota Interchange Fund to try to get this interchange going, because my understanding from the District 7 engineer is that interchange question has to be solved in part before the expansion work can be planned. Representative Walls has money in the federal appropriation for the interchange, but I need the EIS done. So it's those stacked up cards, if you will, those dominoes. This gets back in part, there's also mentioned about 152. Representative Magnus, my question is very much your question. What's the special fund then that needs to be set up if District 7 only has $40 to $50 million a year, and this is a $250 million project right now? I just want to hear what MnDOT's going to do. We've heard about budget buster bridges. We've heard about funds to solve those projects. We've heard about P3 members. We've heard about innovative financing to get interchanges done at Bren Road, at Elk River, and the like. I just want to know the plan for innovative funding for safety projects, because I don't think there's a private partner coming forward to help fund that. What I would encourage you all to do is to sign this letter to the president regarding federal funding. That would be my request to you today. We're going to keep working on this. This is a very difficult problem. Very good points have been raised. Mr. Chair, I would move to lay this bill on the table.
We had another question, if I may. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the question I had was the same one I asked earlier to Mr. Peterson, is would answer from MnDOT's perspective is, would passing this bill, and I know we're going to lay it on the table, but passing this bill, would this then create money being taken from the metro area, from Region 8, from Region 1, around the state to fund Region 6 and 7? Could this have the possibility of doing that?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, that's a difficult question to answer. Just to put it in the STIP alone would create challenges. As I mentioned, the size of the cost of the project compared to the annual construction appropriation for the district, if they took every other project for District 7, for example, out of the STIP and put this project in, it would still need to displace other funding in the STIP, because the STIP has to be fiscally constrained, and that's the federal regulation. So how we would manage the financing beyond that, I guess it's really hard for me to say, but if it had to be kept on the schedule after it was originally inserted in the STIP, obviously, we would have to find money somewhere, because District 7 doesn't have that much money by itself to cover the cost of the project.
Representative Morrow, do you want to comment?
Just, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to let members know, I did ask Mr. Pearson, I didn't want to forestall his testimony. I asked him if he had additional points to make. I apologize, Representative Nelson. I didn't know when I made my motion that there were other hands. I was trying to keep my eye out. But I would renew my motion to lay this bill on the table.
I got one. Yes, sir. One last question from Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, more of an observation and maybe for future discussion around this table. When we did this, the Bloomington Ferry Bridge, the Scott County Transportation Coalition worked closely with Hennepin County. It was a county project, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Peterson, we did it that way on purpose so that it kept MnDOT pretty much out of the funding loop, and the whole thing was done, I believe, with what we would call earmarks today. Now, I know my congressman has real heartburn with it, but I'm thinking and looking at listening to testimony, looking at the bill, if the EIS is necessary, we can be very supportive of getting that done, if indeed that sets the stage for you to work with your federal delegation. However, that gets into the earmark question. And when is it considered an earmark, and when is it considered just prudent bringing home stuff to help get stuff done in the district? And I have a hunch that if MnDOT's got it on the plan and the EIS is done, then the federal officials can be helpful in steering some of the money that's coming this way to that specific project. But, Mr. Chairman, I know that that's an issue you and I have talked about. We should probably air that out in committee on how we could help that work. But certainly having the EIS done would be helpful to set the stage for that. I've seen it work in other cases.
Oh, he's going to cut it off. Is this the last one?
This is the last one. No, I just wanted to follow up on what I asked before, because what Mr. Peterson talked about, Mr. Chair, is that constraints of the size of the projects, and we've heard that in the metro area with the funding that's designed for there, that the number of projects and some of the congestion projects that they're trying to do, that just the massive size of some of these overwhelms the whole metro district, and so you end up having projects delayed or money taken away from them. The infamous 62, where money was taken away from the Devil's Triangle to finish that project, and again we were in the same situation where they were going to drop us totally off the list, and now we're looking 20 years down the road before we get done. So this is more of a symptom of the problem of underfunding our roads, and we can pat ourselves on the back for what we did a couple years ago of increasing the funding for it with raising the gas tax, but it goes nowhere near far enough to complete these projects and get rid of all the backlog of projects that we have in MnDOT that we need to work on getting some other type of funding and more funding for these projects.
Thank you. Well, Representative Morrow renews his motion that House File 2427 be laid on the table. We don't have to vote. Thank you, Representative Morrow. You got another one coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Yes, Mr. Chair, I do. I have a second bill, House File 3486. I would move that House File and ask it to be referred to the Finance Committee.
Representative Morrow moves House File 3486.
And then I have two motions after that.
Finance Committee, right.
Mr. Chair, I would first move the DE1 amendment, which will get the... But I'll first move the DE1, and then I have an A1 amendment to move. So I first move the DE1.
Representative Morrow moves it. It's going to be handed.
Okay.
We don't
Mr. Chair, members, while you're waiting for this is about a Greater Minnesota Transit Investment Plan. You've heard us talk several times this year about the need to have a more formal and comprehensive approach to transit in Greater Minnesota. I will say, members, as you see the DE1 amendment and the A1 amendment, my understanding is, in talking with Mr. Kellen and talking with MnDOT, that there is agreement now on the language. Once we move and pass the DE1 and the A1 amendment, there is one point of disagreement, I think, perhaps still, but I'm not sure. I would turn to Mr. Kellen to testify, if you would, Mr. Chair, while you're waiting to see the DE1 and A1 amendments.
Okay. Sir, do you want to identify yourself and testify?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tony Kellen. I'm president of the Minnesota Public Transit Association and director of operations and technology at St. Cloud Metro Bus. Been involved with this bill, and it covers a number of different things that were brought to light in the last year in regard to the use of federal and state funds for transit in the entire state of Minnesota. Specifically, MnDOT has finished the Greater Minnesota Transit Plan 2010 to 2030. And as an additional component of that, there was a requirement to do a transit service needs implementation plan. Some of the language that you're going to see today before you essentially just corrects some of the language that's used in the old bill, renaming that transit and service needs plan to a Greater Minnesota Transit Investment Plan. That brings it into harmony with what MnDOT in their process right now is calling it. Another major area that we're looking at is in how that investment plan is put together and presented. For years we've talked about the fact that we've always had these goals of meeting 80 or 90% of need in Greater Minnesota for transit. We've never actually quantified the cost of 100% of the need in Greater Minnesota. So you'll see some language in Section 4, Subdivision 1A, in regard to that investment plan that does two things. Number one, it clarifies that the investment plan is having a goal of meeting at least 80% of the total need that's identified in that transit plan that was just completed. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have the amendment before us, yes. And Representative Morrow moves Amendment D1.
Yes, I would move the DE1 amendment.
DE1. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. Okay.
And then, Mr. Did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, yeah. On page 4 of the DE1 amendment, I was going to ask this before we voted on it, but there's handwritten language on here. Is that included? Is that supposed to be included in the amendment, or?
Mr. Chair, if I might, and I'm not sure why we have a version that has handwritten language on it, but the A1 amendment, when we move that, Representative Nelson will be incorporating those changes. I think this was probably a working document between Mr. Kellen and Mr. Schadauer yesterday. The A1 was finally agreed to yesterday. And what the A1 does, for example, on line 4.2, is insert the word recipients and contracted. What the A1 amendment does is remove the language from 4.29 to 4.33. And again, I apologize. I don't know why these handwritten notes were put on the amendment.
Okay.
I think Mr. Burris is looking to me to say something, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, apologies on that. You should disregard the handwritten notes. This was the copy that got photocopied had some additional notes, but the A1 amendment would be what holds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did Mr. Kellen want a complete discussion on the DE1?
I think, Mr. Chair, we better move the A1 because that will put the bill in there. There are two technical corrections to the A1 that I'm reminded of, members, and I apologize. On line 2.3 on the A1 amendment.
Representative Morrill.
Yes, sir.
We have two amendments before us. We got to get rid of one first.
I'm sorry. I thought we had voted on the DE1, sir, Mr. Chair.
We did.
Oh, we did. Okay.
And so I'm moving the A1, but before we vote on it, there are two technical changes. There's a number change that needs to be made to the A1 amendment.
Okay, do you want to make that?
Yes, sir. On line 2.3, where it reads page 4, line 13, it should read page 4, line 12.
Okay, that's a technical.
Right. But we also need a line 2.10, and I've talked with Mr. Burris about this. Oh, I don't know if it would be a 2.0, but Mr. Burris, on the DE1, page 6, line 28, we had the phrase transit service needs implementation plan.
What line was that?
Page 6, line 28. On that, members, you'll see it says transit service needs implementation plan. But, members, the DE1 creates a new term, the Greater Minnesota Transit Investment Plan. So to keep the language consistent, line 6.28 should read operating costs to fully implement the Greater Minnesota Transit Investment Plan. So it would be deleting transit service needs implementation and inserting Greater Minnesota Transit Investment.
Does everyone have that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would move the A1 as amended.
Right. Okay, do you want to complete your testimony?
Do we need to adopt the A1? Mr. Chair, as amended?
That's right. We've got the DE1 adopted. No, adopt the A1 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The amendment A1 is adopted. Now, Mr. Kellen, do you want to complete your testimony?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So what I was highlighting is the change in the Greater Minnesota Transit Investment Plan. We're simply calling out the requirement for MnDOT to take the four categories of transit in Greater Minnesota and tell us what it would cost to fund 100% of the need that was identified in that plan, retaining the goal of 80 and 90%. So that's on that matter. The other items in the bill are clarifications of what are state sources of funds with the Greater Minnesota Transit account. There's some cleanup language that removes old language from when the administrative rules were originally created. On the bottom of page 1, there is a requirement for MnDOT to establish administrative rules for criteria for how federal funds are evaluated and how they are dispersed. And that is the substantive pieces of the changes.
Mr. Chair, what this bill does is it incorporates a number of language changes. MnDOT requested it creates a Greater Minnesota Transit Investment Plan that builds upon the transit plan, and it tries to more accurately reflect what the needs are in Greater Minnesota and what the resources that would be needed to meet those needs. And with that, Mr. Chair, we would stand for questions, and I imagine MnDOT would like to comment as well.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How do you define Greater Minnesota?
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, that's a wonderful question because I always think of it as the 80 counties, but I may be wrong on this regard. I would have to turn to either Mr. Kellen or MnDOT.
Mr. Kellen?
And, Mr. Chair, before he answers, I'll just set the premise of the question. In the metropolitan area, some of us have been chafing under this definition of a seven-county metro area and an even smaller transit taxing district as really no longer reflective of anything, of absolutely anything, and yet we don't do anything about either governance or funding. And I'd get very excited about your bill if you thought of asking some of those bigger, stickier questions. What is the metro area? Because wherever the metro area ends, Greater Minnesota starts. And it does seem to me that that has to be somehow resolved before we would even understand what is the area that this bill addresses. And in that seven-county metro area, we have an even smaller transit taxing district. That's one level of taxation. We have local property taxes funding capital, including funding capital. And then in the five-county area, we have a sales tax. So we're growing a system that really makes no sense and that has no equitable taxation level. And I think at a certain point, as this goes forward, we really have to ask the question about the whole state. Where does the metro area end? Where do those policies end? Where does this begin? I mean, it's something we're finally going to have to face. You know I've been sort of whining about this for some time, but I don't know when we just sit down around a table and figure it out.
Go ahead. Representative, or Mr. Kellen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hausman, Greater Minnesota is anything located out of the seven-county metro area. In regard to the Public Transit Participation Program, Statutes 174, that program is composed, as you know, of a number of different things, but federal and state money primarily. All state funds that go to Greater Minnesota Transit go outside of the seven-county metro area today. There is a ability in the law and a requirement for MnDOT to distribute the federal funds also in the non-urbanized areas by application in the metro area in that same public transit participation program.
Any further questions? Not. You had completed your testimony. You're with MnDOT, Mr. Kellen?
Mr. Chair, I'm with the Minnesota Public Transit Association.
I think Mr. Shadar may have something to add, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mason.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I just want to bring up one point. While we're using the definition as a seven-county metro area, not everybody in those seven counties pays into the metro transit taxing district. So then we have those people in limbo unless we get a better definition here.
Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, I agree. I'm with Representative Hausman. I want a 87-county transit plan, and you're right, Representative Hausman, that is the sticky work. We're just working right now with the current definitions Representative Mason, which either say 80 counties or 80 counties plus the non-urbanized metro. But I think Mr. Shadar also can speak to that as well.
Mr. Shadar.
Mr. Chair, committee members, good morning. I'm Mike Shadar. I'm the director of the Office of Transit for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Just to quickly summarize, MnDOT is in support of this change of language here, and to respond specifically to that question about the metropolitan area, it is defined in 174.22. It kind of refers to another statute. It says the metropolitan area has the meaning given it in section 473.121, which is the Met Council's statute, and that specifically calls out the seven county metro area, and it describes some exceptions for some of the border cities on the seven county metro area's borders.
Representative Hornstein, I think this would be a good question for the policy committee to square away next time.
Mr. Chair, I've been thinking about this because we do need to do
reform of the Met Council in terms of its governance, but I think, you know, the longer we have this on the table, the more I think Representative Hausman's idea really for a statewide transit authority makes sense. So it is actually our intention during the interim to gather some of the stakeholders and begin to figure this out. The whole issue of transit governance statewide is, I think, an issue that needs to rise to the top of the agenda for next year.
Mr. Shadow, are you ever any other testimony?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it was quite timely that I had to see Mr. Nobles there for a moment because he's reminding me, listening to this discussion, that we actually have a legislative audit commission report that's just being started now. It's this year's program of work. We'll probably be ready sometime in the summer when you're ready to start this discussion. They're looking at the metropolitan area, particularly metropolitan governance of transit issues and how that works. So they'll have some good info for us.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further questions? If not, Representative Morrow, you want to renew your motion at House File 3486, be recommended pass and sent to the Finance Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
As amended. That's right. We had amended. No further questions. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary. House File 3486, as amended, will be returned to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
That's the last bill. There was, yeah, thank you. We will have a meeting Thursday morning, and it'll probably be, we have a lot of items on the agenda. So we have the committee room, was it 10? Room 10?
Abby?
Room 5 for Thursday morning. So if you get there, we'll have a lot of bills which supposedly were assumed to be in a omnibus bill, which will not be. So we'll have to have some of the authors back just for voting, but there'd be no amendment on the bills that we've already heard. And some of the bills will definitely be laid on a table, and that's it. Any questions? Yeah, we may have to have a meeting after Easter to process those bills that are held over, which don't deal with what non-finance, really, or finance, yeah. We may, but I think we can get them. We can finish them Thursday if we get in here and get a quorum initially. Yeah. Meeting adjourned.